Have you ever noticed that when you're in the bar and some drunk guy's talking, the less he knows what he's talking about, the louder he talks? Have you ever noticed that?
Hey, good evening, everybody. We are 2 seconds into the podcast, and David Griggs has already been muted. I'm your host, Dan Sherwood. Welcome back to the Hoops HD Report. This is our weekly podcast where we go over anything and everything going on in the college basketball world. Again, joining me over there, muted already, is David Griggs. Off my other side is John Stalica. In the second row below us, in the middle, we have John Titel with Matt Sikowski and Joby Fortson off. And then we have joining us as a blank screen with video difficulties, apparently, is Lee Del Vecchio. First time we've had you on, I think, all season, Lee. Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm so, like, first of all, this is like being in Hollywood Squares. It's kind of interesting.
Brady Bunch. We're going Brady Bunch here.
Second of all, yeah, I'm the really boring one, but I'm not the drunkest one, so I've got that going for me.
I think John T would make the perfect center square here.
Okay, I'll take John Titel for 1,000. Now let's get going here, and we've got a lot to cover tonight, actually. And the first thing I want to hit on, and Joby, you being our ACC guy, big news out of the ACC where Mark Gottfried was fired effective the end of the season, in a little bit of a strange move there.
It's a typical state sort of thing to do. I mean, to be very honest, they unfortunately, and they've won two national titles, at least in my lifetime. That shows how old I am. They are a solid program. They make the tournament a lot. Under Gottfried, they made a lot. But they always look down the road and see Duke and Carolina. And so they think that they should be Duke and Carolina. It's not the way you should be looking at the world, guys. You should be very happy to be Maryland. You should be happy to aspire to what Virginia is doing right now. You're not Duke or Carolina. And so when Herb Sendek, Gottfried fall short, they say, oh, we can go out and get Greg Marshall. This is a name thrown around. That's ridiculous. Greg Marshall would be insane to leave Wichita State to go to state right now. Well, if you don't like Gottfried, keep him on till the end of the season. You know, let him go. Let the season play out. It's been I'm sure the fact that Smith came in highly regarded and has not delivered better than a 3-10 record in the conference was a big factor, but let the season play out. Fire your coach if you hate it, and get a solid coach to come in. You can probably get a guy off UNC. Name your location to come there.
Well, John T, let me ask you this. I mean, he had some pretty decent success there, not by maybe Duke Carolina standards, but by solid major program standards. And do you think this was a little unfair for him? I mean, yes, he kind of lost the team this year. They are 3-10, but we're at an ACC where 3-10 right now is still on the bubble.
Agreed, but I think you have to understand he's had success everywhere. He started out at Murray State in the mid-90s. All he did was win 3 straight conference titles and make the postseason 3 straight times. Then he goes to Alabama, makes 7 straight postseasons in the middle of a decade-plus run where he finished with a winning percentage over 60%. Then he comes to the Wolfpack, makes the NCAA tourney, and wins a game for 4 straight years before having some recent downturn. 16-17 last year, missed the postseason, and a .500 record this season. He is certainly having a bad season. I don't think that's up for debate. However, I don't think it's his fault, and he's a good coach. So I think the Wolfpack are going to learn the hard way. You can't just plug someone in. This guy's a good coach and deserves another chance, I think.
I disagree, John. The key word there is learn the hard way. I don't think NC State's going to learn a damn thing. They're going to keep being ridiculous and for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at the two lesser Tobacco Road programs, it's interesting the dichotomy between Wake and NC State. Wake is a lot more comfortable and secure with their place in the world and generally less crazy. And it's paid off for them. They don't fly off the handle. They waited. Look, if anything we've talked about in the past, we've joked that they waited too long to fire people, but they've done a pretty good job usually of making hires, and the program is in a stable place. Whereas NC State, look, I don't think Mark Gottfried's a great coach, but I think like Joby said, right, it's such a state thing to do. Like, you need to fire him now, but let him coach. Like, what is that? And you were leaking that you were trying to hire somebody else in January. Like, what? Just be normal. just be normal for a little bit. And I already, is it too early to feel bad for Kevin Keats, who will probably, I would guess, be the next coach? He's currently the coach at Wilmington. He coached under Patino at Louisville. He's done a great job there. I mean, the only thing Morris State will be when they screw it up inevitably and they lose him to, like, you know, if Larrañaga retires and Miami ends up getting him.
Well, I would just say, you know, Archie Miller is an NC State alum, but I don't think he has to be crazy to go there. But
no, the state I think Keats would be crazy to go there. Kevin Keats, they try and get Archie Miller, and if he strings them along just for leverage, because it certainly wouldn't be for any other reason to do that, or Greg Marshall, and by the time they get strung along, Keats isn't available, and they're back at square one.
Matt, you had a comment on it as well?
Yeah, like, I don't think State handled it super well, but I think the ultimate decision is actually the right one. They were awful last year. They're awful this year with talent that should be top 25, and they're going to lose Smith in year 7. And they're going to be like with nothing to replace him. They're going to be awful again next year with Godfrey. So at this point, I actually don't mind them going maybe a year early instead of doing it next year when it's blatantly obvious he's gone from November on and he's on the hot seat. So
I would agree with that, Matt, except I don't see why doing it in February changes that. Like, why, like, people talk about there was a lot of discord. Well, the team's not going anywhere anyway. Like this is going to turn around to what, finish 500? Like, they weren't going to be near any tournament. I don't get doing it now. And I also, I mean, I feel like there seemed to be a lot of issues in terms of a lot of guys leaving and transfer issues. I think that was as much of a problem as the success, because as we've mentioned, he won more there in terms of the postseason than you could argue anybody since Valvano. I'd have to actually look it up, but he's been pretty successful by their standards. I think this was a lot of behind-the-scenes discord as much as anything else.
Well, we could go about an hour here on Goffey, but we've got a lot more we've got to get to. But yeah, John,
I just want to say one
comment first, and then David also.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you don't go with Kevin Keats, there's another guy in the UNC system over in Greensboro, and that would be Wes Miller. The only problem is NC State going to want to hire a former Tar Heel as their head coach?
David?
Yeah, my thing is, like, we, once the season's over, we do, like, the May, June. I hope that in the June podcast, we're talking about how NC State still has not hired a coach, because that would also be such an NC State thing to do. That was my only
thing. All right, let me go ahead. I'm going to pull up some of the standings here. We're going to go through each of the conferences. I'm going to start tonight in the Pac-12. It should be coming right up on the screen now, where we had huge news coming last night as, congratulations, Oregon State gets that first conference win. On a more serious note, let me start with you. You being our Arizona guy, and they had a heck of a trouble getting past Washington, but they did have a couple injuries for the game, though.
They did. They were missing Kadeem Allen, the point guard, with a dislocated finger, and Deuce Ristic, the big man. Thank God that Lauri Markkanen decided to turn in the game of his life with a huge double-double, and that the rest of the team was able to pick up the slack. By the rest of the team, I mean like the 6 or 7-man rotation, so hopefully they can bounce back, because as you can see on the right side of the screen there is a lot of games looming this weekend that are going to be huge for them.
Yeah, the host in USC, and then the huge one Saturday against UCLA in a battle of two teams fighting for a two line, if not higher, in the tournament. But we also had a few other results in the Pac-12, including Matt, let me bring it here. Their tournament chances took a big hit on Friday night when they lost their game to Stanford.
Yeah, what you had going for you is no real bad losses. To lose that to at least a questionable Stanford team was not a good look. And now it makes a game this Wednesday against Oregon, I think, must win, because somewhere there's going to be a couple of slip-ups in championship week, whether it's like, say, Wichita State in the Valley, maybe Middle and CUSA. And somewhere, I think a couple of bids will be stolen, and that might work. That might well be Cal's bid if they lose on Wednesday.
Well, the other big result from the weekend, Lee, let me bring it here. UCLA beat USC and really just pounded them. And now Where does that put the teams like UCLA? I think we have an interesting battle here come tournament time, because only one of these three teams here between Arizona, Oregon, and UCLA could end up in the West region. And I think they're, in my opinion, they're pretty tight, but we'll get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the UCLA-USC series this year was interesting because, you know, a lot of us really doubted USC for a while. I mean, I know they were number one in Ken Pomeroy's luck rating, and for a good reason. I know that the out-of-conference was not great for USC. But then they went out there, and they were really, really solid in the home win over UCLA. And then on Saturday, what we thought would happen in the first game happened, and they got the absolute boat race. In terms of, you know, the way I look at it, I think UCLA is clearly a better, stronger team than USC.
About compared to Oregon and Arizona?
No. That's like you said, and that's the problem. As good as UCLA is, it's very difficult to step them over Oregon or Arizona because, I mean, the win that the country was sat up and took notice about UCLA isn't really that impressive anymore. The Kentucky win. I mean, it's a good win, but, you know, it comes down to, you know, if the committee weighs it towards the computers heavily, UCLA is going to be in good shape. If they look at it beyond the computers, they're going to realize Kentucky's not nearly as good, I think, as the numbers reflect. And that's where I think it's going to be a problem for UCLA, especially because it seems like year when, you know, the committee's talking about incorporating new metrics. And I mean, not for this year necessarily, but that tells me the committee is open to the idea of it, which tells me they're looking at a lot of things. And that's got to be their hope, is that the committee really buys into Kentucky more than I do. Because I think UCLA's – I don't know how they could jump over – it's going to be very hard for them, I should say, to jump over Arizona or Oregon. But they've certainly got a chance Thursday when they go – actually, no, that's Cal going to Arizona. I apologize. But it is the Arizona swing for UCLA this week. And so this is a huge opportunity right in front of them to really – it's their last chance, really, because after that, they've got three other games where they can really hurt themselves.
Right. We can see there on the screen, actually, we've got some of those metrics, the KenPom, BPI, and Sagarin Green, KPI, ESPN, strength of record, and Joby, your nitty-gritty rings there in red. But, David, I think you had one quick comment on this conference before we go on.
Well, it was just basically like Arizona. I think they're beatable now simply because, as Tytel already mentioned, they have such a small rotation and they're so beat up. But how impressed are you with what Sean Miller and that whole team has been able to accomplish? It's impressive enough on its surface, but when you look and you see how limited their personnel has been all year long and they're still putting this out, just what a year from Arizona. And if they can get healthy and get everybody not suspended and, you know, to quit drinking like I do and things like that, this is going to be – how good can this team be?
Well, let's go ahead and switch over to the ACC here. Joby, I know you don't want to do it, but we've got to do it. Virginia, we're just – as we came on the air tonight, they just lost their – was it fourth straight game, losing at home to Miami tonight.
They're in line to be the ACC regular season leader 4 games ago.
Eight and seven in conference now, tied with Syracuse.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact is they've had some unlucky breaks. I mean, they've lost – they lost on a last-second shot to Florida State. They lost in overtime to Pitt, Virginia Tech, and now Miami. So they overtime's not their friend. But in each case, they had a seven-point lead tonight, you know, late. They had a double-digit lead late against Virginia Tech. And this team is not scoring right now. It's not. It was scoring early. Had the most efficient – KenPom had him as one of the most efficient offenses earlier in the year. That has to be completely going away. They have 33, as you see up on your screen, adjusted offense. Used to be one, you know. The defense is still playing well. They still can do those sort of things. But when you only score 40-some-odd points, you're going to lose most of your games.
Yeah, well, there is one team slower than them somehow in the nation, but they are 350 in tempo.
they can get out of it if they find their shot. I would suggest putting it's a risk because he's not as strong defensively, but you got to go with Kyle Guy and Jerome and let the freshmen see if they can shoot you out of it. Parentes looks tired. This is a bad time right now, but – the fact is, Do you really want, let's say Virginia falls to a 7-8 even, you know, with, you know, some, because they still have Carolina left at home. If they start falling down the line dramatically, do you want to be that team that faces them if they find their sea legs in the tournament? They don't. They're the perfect team to face because you'll beat them. But if you watch out, because they still play an unusual style that's tough to get to prepare for if you haven't seen it over and over again.
Well, Stalica, the top three teams in this conference, most notably both North Carolina and Duke, both had really good weeks. Duke with the win at Virginia and a squeaker, but they did get by Wake Forest. Carolina won at NC State. These teams are – I actually thought that North Carolina, as of today, was a one seed, even though they're only number 8 in the polls. Would you – do you think the polls are have them way underrated here?
I think before I get into that, I think it's telling that the only unluckier team that Virginia right now is going to be Wake Forest, and that actually played a little bit into their two losses against Duke, where both of them were for the taking, but the Deacons were not able to come out in either game. But that being said, I am a little
surprised. Did a ball stop on a cylinder? Did a winning shot literally stop?
Yeah. See, I would argue, like, yeah. Wake Forest was trying to win that game.
Wake Forest, luck is definitely not there for them.
Yeah, there's luck, and then there's Wake Forest was just a disgrace in the last 2 minutes of the game. You won't believe this, guys. I was screaming at my television watching it. It was
I find that to be the least surprising thing I've heard.
I can't feel bad for a team that does the things they did in that game, but sorry, I interrupted as usual.
That's okay. Let me just get back to North Carolina here. I mean, I know they're only about 7th or 8th in the polls, but I think you're going to begin to see many bracketologists have them up on the one line thanks to Baylor's two straight losses. But at the same time, I think whoever wins the ACC is going to wind up at the top of the – or at least the bottom of the one seed line anyhow. But I guess my other question would be, Chad, as far as natural regions go, would that be the East region for the ACC or – could it be the South region?
Well, if they are going to be the fourth one seed, it's going to be whatever region's left over. And if we're looking at Kansas, Villanova, and Gonzaga, the ACC champion will end up in the South, so it may not matter.
But one of the reasons I ask that is because would it be better to be the last number one or maybe the first number two going east?
Well, the last number one in this case.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with the idea of Carolina as a one. I mean – They've got a bunch of losses, but they put absolute beatings on people. They put beatdowns on teams at a regularity more so than I think anybody near the top other than Gonzaga, who's obviously in the West Coast Conference. I mean, they're a scary team. Now, because they're North Carolina, they're very prone to, you know, throwing games away, but they don't have a really – I mean, Indiana's fallen apart, but, I mean, is that really a bad loss? And I'm a defender of Georgia Tech, so I won't say that's a terrible loss. But I am very high on this Carolina team.
Well, Matt, let me hit one other team with you before we move on off the ACC, and that's Miami, who had another team which had a really good week with wins over Georgia Tech, Clemson, and today's win at Virginia. I think – is this a Miami team that's gone from on the bubble to almost solidly in the field at this point?
Yeah, I think – I don't know if I'd still want them to lose the rest of the game and see what happens, but I think they're basically in at this point. And now, God would probably, if the tournament started today, be wearing white after that win at Virginia.
Right.
And that I was thinking if they lost tonight, they have a daunting schedule left because they got to go to Virginia Tech, to Florida State, and then host Duke, who's the hottest team in the ACC. So winning tonight, I think, solves a lot of that. And barring maybe like four in a row, including the first day of the ACC tournament, and anything else in the regular season, they're probably maybe even wearing white.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, David, first.
Well, before we get off of this, go ahead because this is a different question.
Okay, well, I was just going to go to the highlighted upcoming games here, and we've got a few big –
Well, then before we do that
– Okay.
We have two teams. Well, one, Pittsburgh, that you put in the day. I still think you have lead in your house. But another one, Clemson. We're starting to see those teams projected in by either, like, John Tytel's been putting them in, other bracketologists. That is categorically low. Like, when you are six games below 500, you're just not in the tournament. Are things so bass backwards this year that we might see someone 4 or 6 games below 500 inside the bubble?
Well, let's ask that to Tytel because you just called him out on that. So, John T., you got an answer?
I'm calling him out. I'm asking a question. I'm calling you out.
Not a great one. I mean, it's no shock to say they're trending downwards. Just look at all the losses. I don't think they're dead in the water just because if you look at the red and green numbers, like, they're not atrocious. Granted, they need to get some wins. They can't just keep going win-loss. But you can't tell me that if Pitt beats Carolina that they are far outside the bubble. I think they're right on it to begin with. I don't think they're going to beat Carolina, but the fact that they have these wins to get, whereas a team in a minor mid-major conference doesn't have these chances. So they obviously have to take advantage of the chances. I could see them being put off the bubble. Like, they're not great now, but they're literally, I think, one great win away from getting right back in the mix.
Well, say we just take the MEAC champion, make them the 16 seed, and we'll just make this one of the regionals.
It might not be bad.
I do have a bone to pick.
I'm sorry. Lee had one comment.
Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Chad, you list key upcoming games for 15 programs. I'm not seeing the Boston College upcoming game. And, you know, if we're going to spend part of the first 20 minutes talking about Pitt, Clemson, and NC State, although I actually, like, the Clemson-Pitt thing is, like, all of their numbers are really good except their record. But, like, I think one of them's going to somehow get in. And it's just so disgusting to put in a team that's, like, 6-10. Or 6-12 or whatever.
All right, well, we do need to keep moving here. I just want to quickly point out some of the upcoming games this week, including the huge rivalry, according to the national media, Duke and Syracuse.
Syracuse,
if I can't speak correctly. Wednesday night, of course, Louisville, North Carolina is going to be huge.
Kind of a big Wednesday night.
We just mentioned that North Carolina Pitt game, also Syracuse, Louisville, Duke, Miami coming up on Saturday, so... and North Carolina, Virginia, which unfortunately, Joby, the way Virginia's playing right now, may be a blowout next Monday night.
Hell, I'm worried about State on Saturday.
Say that.
Get 50 points. Am I asking for so much to not buy into Virginia? I know they're slow, but Jesus.
Let's move to the Big East and Sleeka, let me bring you in here because your Xavier team had a tough week and an injury.
Well, the injury, I guess, has been ongoing because Trayvon blew it a couple weeks earlier. I think he had initially tweaked his ankle against Creighton. He had aggravated the injury against Villanova and ended up sitting out the games at Providence and also Marquette, although he was part of the shoot-around for Marquette. But judging by the result of that game, it was probably wise to sit him out and not risk further injury given how that game started. At least that was to Matt's delight, though. I will say that, thanks to Marcus Howard.
And they also throw in the loss to Providence earlier the week.
Yep, and may have ended up throwing Providence a life raft because if you look at Joby's nitty-gritty rankings, second from the bottom in, you're Providence Friars.
Yep, and let me ask you about your Marquette team also here. You are a Marquette alum. If you look at all the red and the green ratings, they're all looking like a tournament team, except for the RPI column over here at 71. Is there an explanation for that?
I think a little bit of lucky. Some of their cupcakes that they thought would be like in the 200-ish range have actually been sub 300 or sub 275. So I think, once again, RPI is a really poor indicator. I mean, it happens to be my team that I'm making the case against it, so I'm not being real objective here, but I've always hated the RPI, and at least this year I might have a decent reason to.
Yeah, Western Carolina is really crushing them in terms of teams that are bad. That, you know, you might have thought Howard would be bad, but I don't think many people would have thought that Western Carolina would have 2 wins this calendar year. It's a problem.
Well, in terms of the Big East, I mean, the question here is how big is this Big East bubble? And Tytel, what about teams like Marquette, Seton Hall, maybe even Providence? How many bids are we looking at here, do you think, out of the Big East?
I think of those 3 teams, Marquette, Seton Hall, Providence, I think at least one is getting in. I don't think all 3 are. It goes back to the argument from the Pitt-Clemson thing. I mean, the perk you get of playing in a high major conference is that even in late February, there's still big wins available out there. Granted, you have to take advantage and get them. But if Seton Hall beats Xavier, if Providence wins at Creighton, I think they are making their argument for them. But they have to do it on the court by winning the game.
I think that's a matter of when Seton Hall beats Xavier, not a matter of if at this point.
Oh, Xavier has looked putrid.
David, here's an upcoming schedule in the Big East. Is there any specific games you're looking at other than Xavier's two matchups here with Seton Hall and Butler?
Well, yeah, I think those are two of the biggest ones. That Marquette at Providence game is pretty good because Marquette still has a rather weak RPI, but their profile is pretty solid. Other than that, they add that road win. It's pretty good. I'm anxious to see. I don't think it's going to be close, but the Butler at Villanova game, I mean, it's a certain one seed almost for against a protected seed. Even though Nova's at home, it's going to be interesting to see how that one comes out. But Providence-Creighton, another big one that John Tytel already mentioned, because, again, Creighton trying to still establish themselves without Mo Watson, and Providence inching closer towards the bubble, they get that one. Their profile's looking a lot better.
Right, and, of course, the Creighton-Villanova game as well. So Villanova with two home tests, but at least tests against teams that look like tournament teams and actually the second and third place teams of the conference. But,
and the Creighton game is also at Wells Fargo.
Yeah, and I'm starting to think this Nova team, I mean, I watched them last year and I've watched them this year. I'm starting to think they're pretty good.
Tytel, let me turn over to the Big Ten here. We're talking about injuries. We actually had two major ones this week. For Maryland, Michael Savanskovsky, if I pronounce his name correctly, who has been in and out of the lineup all season, is now done for the season. But even bigger, Michigan State suffering another huge injury with Aaron Harris out for the year.
It is a long list all season long that is not getting any better. We've seen, I think, the biggest Big Ten injury all year is OG Anunoby, as I think that's going to make the difference perhaps in Indiana making or missing the tourney, parentheses, they're going to be missing the tourney. Yeah, it seems that there have been a ton of injuries this year. I don't see Harris maybe. I mean, he's a big part of the team, but I think that when Miles Bridges was out, that's when they really took a downturn. And again, like, if you can't beat Nebraska at home on Thursday with or without him, then you shouldn't be in the tourney anyway.
Well, we need to talk about Nebraska.
We are not going to talk about Nebraska, but Lee, let me give you a shot here to talk a little bit Big Ten. And a couple
four losses teams by 2 points or less, they really should be.
Lee, how about a team in the middle here in the Big Ten, though? A team like this Michigan team beat Wisconsin this week, loses in overtime to Minnesota, kind of been in our fields, out of the fields all year. Do you think they finally turned the corner now?
I think they have. I mean, the loss, you know, at Minnesota hurts, but I'm kind of high on the Gophers. I mean, it's a really solid resume. I think it's a much stronger non-conference, I think, than a lot of people might have anticipated being in the preseason. I thought they did a pretty good job with the scheduling of the, you know, top 50 strength of the record. The one road win thing, you know, concerning. I'm not gonna lie, it's concerning, but they do have neutral site wins over a good Marquette team that I like, a good SMU.
And they got a good shot on Wednesday for another road win.
Yep, they had a shot on Wednesday. Well, they've got three shots coming up for good road wins. For road wins, only one of them is good. That would be the Northwestern game, because you know, then it's Rutgers, and the worst of those three, of course, the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Nebraska is a tournament. Nebraska is 5 points away from having.
It feels like it's a program people nitpick just because Beilein's so different with his style and with his recruiting. But I mean, the losses they have, you know, by four at Wisconsin, by eight at Michigan State when Michigan State was getting kind of hot. You know, Ohio State is a very hot and cold team. I wouldn't be too worried about Michigan. They're also a team, all, you know, the metrics across the board for them are very strong. They're not a great defensive team, obviously, but it's good. The only issue for them is if they finish, you know, middle of a poor Big Ten, I think their concern will be seeding rather than in or out.
Well, let me turn to Matt. Let me turn, you know, you don't want to do it because it's your arch rival from Marquette there, but turn to the top of the Big Ten. Purdue, Wisconsin, is there a team that one of these two that you think is better than the other? I had a bit of a debate with both Salika and David on the on the website today about that issue.
Yeah, I think I assuming I'm going to be tagging with Stalika and Mr. Griggs here, and then, yeah, I think it's Purdue.
Damn right you are.
Weather up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why is Purdue better than Wisconsin then? Sell me on it.
I think they're better basically in all the ratings, and I think they've done more. I mean, besides being Wisconsin, they did beat Notre Dame on a neutral. I think it's better than anything Wisconsin did on a conference.
And then even it,
yeah, exactly. Then conference they won at Maryland.
Well, I just want to say, it's great that we don't get a home and away in Purdue, Wisconsin, because we had to make sure that we got, you know, Rutgers and Penn State squeezed into the schedule here. That's good for everybody. I'm not bitter about it. It's just
Joby, let me get you back in here about on the Big Ten, and especially to some of these upcoming games. Is there something specific you're looking at here?
Yeah, we've already been mentioning Michigan. This Saturday is the day where you look at it. It's going to be Purdue at Michigan. That, yeah, we're going to find out maybe the Big Ten champion that day. If Purdue can walk into Michigan and win in Chrysler, that's outstanding. And if Michigan can win, on the other hand, not only are they in the field, they're angling towards, as we always say on this show, wearing white. That's one game that I look at. And then the other one was let's look at Saturday night, Northwestern in Indiana. Can we officially put Northwestern in this field and kill the Hoosiers, and maybe Tom Crean's career as coach
there? Well, it may not matter. It may matter when they lose at Iowa on Tuesday before that. But
Come to this for Indiana. A must-win Saturday night game against Northwestern. Were there – probably the clear underdog. I mean, by the way, are we gonna talk? Like, we talked about the Pac-12 earlier. That Arizona loss to Indiana, that could be a bad loss in terms of the, you know, the top of the bracket. That could really hurt them, as well as obviously kill Indiana. That Tom
North Green Carolina lost to Indiana too, Lee. I mean, actually.
I would argue Tom Crean no longer coaching in Indiana helps Indiana. So, in many ways, a loss would help Indiana and hurt Arizona.
Isn't Tom Crean having a losing record against Northwestern enough of an indictment against them?
Ty, let me ask you one other question. Michigan State, we started with the discussion of them already. Actually, let me bring it back around to them. With Nebraska and Wisconsin at home this week, how important is that for them to prove to the committee that they can win even with yet another injury?
Important. I think it's arguably more important for the Nebraska game in terms of if they lose to Wisconsin, I think that they're expected to, perhaps even with a healthy Harris. If you lose to Nebraska at home without a healthy Harris, I think that you're putting one nail of many into your coffin.
Well, you got to look at – I mean, they've lost three games by 1 point, another game by 2 points. Nebraska's just been royally screwed by the
– Well, David, I was going to ask you about the Big 12, but because of what your current comments, Matt –
You just have to make adjustments to how good the team really is, and they should be in the field.
Well, it's a failure of coaching is what it comes down to.
It is not a failure of coaching. The coaching is excellent.
I think I'm going to mute myself and just leave.
Colorado on probation? Or is that me?
Let's go here over to the Big 12. And, Matt, the best game in terms of numbers and probably the best game that was played all weekend was this Kansas-Baylor round two here. Kansas ending the game on an 8-0 run to pull out the win. What did you take away from that, if anything?
That Kansas is an amazing regular season team, and then Baylor's a little bit their old way starting to come back to where I think – Kansas basically locked up a one seed, and Baylor probably has to just about win out now through the Big 12 tournament to have any hope of getting back on the one line.
I'd agree with that. Joby, another team that had a real good – two more teams that had real good weeks in the Big 12 were both Iowa State and Oklahoma State there at 4-5.
Oklahoma State, wow. I mean, this team was – this was one of those many – Can you believe we're looking at ACC teams at 4-0 in their conference and being so down? We were talking about Oklahoma State in that same way. Now they're 7-7 and on fire.
They were 0-6 to start the conference season.
We're about to see and look at their schedule. They can beat K-State. They should beat Texas Tech at home. I think that 9-7, the way they're playing, isn't outrageous, though we're going to see a lot with that Kansas State game. Oklahoma State, one of the hottest teams in the country. Give them credit. No, I would want to play them right now. Oh, wow. Oklahoma State. Yeah, I'll give them. And Iowa State. I'm sorry if we get we get lost on that. Iowa State has solidly built themselves into the field, whereas there are other Big 12 teams slipping. Segue to TCU.
Well, TCU. Let me ask you that question. TCU. Where are you with them right now?
Holding my nose and putting them in. I like the direction their program is going. I think they're actually a really good story, whether they make the field or not. Just
look
just
at the week they have ahead here, too.
Yeah.
At Kansas, just, home to West Virginia this week.
Yeah, now if they win at Kansas, I'm going to start feeling a lot better about them. But they still, I think they're just 2-5 on the road, or they still only have the two true road wins. I think getting another one against anyone, be it Kansas or anyone, especially Kansas, would really help their cause. But I still have them in. I like them more than Texas Tech. But I think that their chances are good of getting in. But don't you think that they have to get to at least 8-10, considering they did so little out of conference?
I would think they would. And just as a note, we are recording this around – right now it's around 10 o'clock on Monday evening. The Iowa State-Texas Tech game is going on as we speak.
I am putting it on.
But, Matt – one other team we've got to discuss here in the Big 12 is this Kansas State team. They stopped the bleeding of having lost 6 out of 7 by beating Texas, although the one win they had during that 6 out of 7 was at Baylor. So what do you do about that?
I'm probably actually a little bit higher than them than TCU just because of that Baylor win. That, like, they've proven they could beat one of the real big teams in the league. So I think they're just in. I think they need 2, if not 3 more wins to feel comfortable, and that Wednesday would be a real nice idea. And then I think Saturday is another banana peel in that, like, yes, Texas and Oklahoma have 4 records, but I don't think either of those are that bad of basketball teams. Like, and it wouldn't stun me at all if they lost to Oklahoma there.
All right. Well, let's
Chad, real quick. This conference does have the team I am on alert for being the WTF team that gets put in and we don't see how or why. And they are playing right now. If Texas Tech somehow gets in this field, I'm done. I'm done. That's it.
Well, I disagree with you, Lee, because I've got Texas Tech barely out of the field right now. I think they're right.
That's my point. They're just close enough to be the most dangerous team in the room. And I wanted to make a case for them like my other past insane cases. I can't. I mean, you know, look. It's great that they won at Richmond, but that's their only road win. And the rest of the season for them is not easy, obviously. Home tonight with the Iowa State game. They need this game. They got to win at home against Texas. And then the road trips are at Oklahoma State and Kansas State. How the hell they're going to stop Oklahoma State, I have no idea. But
well, Tytel, here's the week ahead coming up in the Big 12 where almost every game is important if you look at it. Is there one that really stands out for you?
I would say West Virginia at Baylor. I know it's a week from tonight, so it's arguably not this coming week, but it's not going to hurt either team because I think they're both solidly in the field. Baylor's strength of schedule, I wish it could go higher than 1 because it's so ridiculous, both non-conference and conference. Huge chance for West Virginia, but I think that Baylor is going to get back on track, although they should not. If they sleep on that and use the Iowa State game Saturday as a trap game, they are going to get bit because Iowa State, I think, is for real.
Well, yeah. Matt, we started the show talking about injuries. The one other one that came out, I think, almost a full week ago now, though, but came from Florida where one more guy, Igbuno, is done for the year for them. How bad do you think that will end up hurting the Gators in the end of the day?
It hurts them because you need to have some interior depth, especially in the tournament where the whistles are even more unpredictable. And so if their other big guy, Kavarius Hayes, not a bad player, but if he gets some fouls, all of a sudden they have to start playing some lineup combinations they've not played all year, and that could throw you off. And given that I think they're going to be something like a 4 seed, there are some good teams on the 13 line that can come up and get you. So if you see Florida as a 4 seed go out in the first round because of some weird things, that might be why.
Well, Joby, who do you think winds up winning the SEC now? We've got Florida and Kentucky still tied, but, you know, Florida with the injury and Kentucky just has been winning games but has not been impressive in doing it.
the SEC is coming back down to earth a little bit. I thought with Kentucky jumping out of conference with some really good play, I thought, when Florida beats them, that's really good. Florida did manhandle Kentucky that was before the injury, but did manhandle Kentucky. But it erupts a different place than in Gainesville. Especially an awesome new facility that Florida has. Kentucky is, until someone tells me different, Kentucky is still the big dog there. I've got to say it. Kentucky has got to be the team. They've got more talent. They've got, and Monk is a hell of a player. If he gets off, goes for 40-some-odd, it's tough to beat them.
Well, Stalica, you've been a big South Carolina fan all year. Are they doing the same thing they did last year and completely collapsing? They go 0-2 this week, losing both to Arkansas and then to Vanderbilt.
What gave it away? My haircut over the weekend when I told the barber, give me the angry Frank?
There you go. Yeah, you got the Frank Martin look going on too. So what's your thought, being that you commune with him a lot?
But if you heard his, some of his post-game comments after the Arkansas game, there were some danger signs from what he saw in practice. I mean, he decided not to go too hard on him prior to the Arkansas game, which might have been a mistake because they ended up losing that game at home. No biggie. And then they go to Vanderbilt, lose to the Commodores, which is not advisable this year. And now they're coming up on another dangerous two-game stretch where they go back to the Swamp for a rematch with Florida, and no rest for the weary, because then they're coming home against a hungry Tennessee team. So if you remember the Alabama game, that was one they've already lost. So if they suddenly drop to 10-6, then they're starting to creep closer to the bubble, but at least with a stronger schedule compared to last year. I think Joby will save his spankings for a team like Texas Tech this year.
Well, Lee, you talked earlier about teams that could sneak into the field that no one's paying attention to. And I posted one on the site this morning, and they're right here in the SEC on the 5-line, Alabama. Do you want to join me on the Alabama bandwagon?
I'm still trying to talk myself into why I am on the Arkansas bandwagon. I know I'm on it. But, I mean, when you lose to Mississippi State and Missouri, I mean – I have only a few rules in life, and one of them is, like, if you lose to Utah, or if you lose to Oregon and you lose to Oregon State, or if you're Arkansas and you lose to Missouri, I can't put you in. I can't. It can't happen. It cannot happen. As for Alabama,
but then you go and win at South Carolina. I mean,
right, that just makes me more upset. You take a look at Alabama. It's fascinating because their non-conference is almost the exact same as Arkansas, but again, and I cannot stress this enough, they didn't lose to Missouri. It's an Alabama team that has, not – they're only non-conference win away from home in a true sense was St. Louis, who's terrible. Arkansas State was – it wasn't – I believe it was played in Birmingham. It was basically a home game. They're away win. Yeah, they got the win at South Carolina, and I like that, but – when you get past 3-0, those games just get weird. And, credit to them, it was a great win. But I'm going to pump my brakes a bit. I mean, it was a 4-0 win over a team that seemed to just be the start of, South Carolina, is it almost a demerit that they needed 4-0 to beat a team that suddenly can't figure out how to beat anybody? So I'm not quite there yet on Alabama. I'm getting there. I mean, it helps with them. Look, they just played Mizzou and LSU back-to-back. The rest of their schedule is a lot tougher in terms of teams that aren't, not too many great teams, but certainly better than those two sacks of potatoes. They host Georgia, then they're at A&M, host Ole Miss, and then at Tennessee. I really think the game at A&M could be huge for them. That's kind of it's a game they got to be able to win if they want to be a tournament team, even more so, I think, than the Tennessee game. Because I need to see them win that game before I really take them too seriously.
All right, David, you had a comment on the SEC also before we move on?
Well, Arkansas is the kind of program I've liked them all year long. And, yeah, they slipped up against Missouri. But I know some of you doubted them, but it's just I've liked them for most of the year, and I still like them now.
Okay, David, you're getting muted.
The other – Alabama, the two losses to Auburn, had they won one of those – I'd be feeling so much better about them.
Well, Tytel, how many – is the SEC just going to be a four-bid league, or is there a fifth team that can take something here?
They might be a three-bid league, so let's slow the roll right there.
So you're not even on Arkansas yet.
I am, but it's like I have to use a lot of calculators to get this done. Right now they're 20-7. If they win over Texas A&M, Auburn, and Georgia and lose to Florida, that puts them at 23-8. They could face an Alabama team who they beat by 21 at home a couple weeks ago in the SEC tourney to make it 24-8 and then get destroyed by Kentucky or Florida at 24-9. Like, it's a weak bubble, but 24 wins just might get it done. So I think it's going to be a three-bid league, but Arkansas has a chance.
Okay.
Well, hey, shoot your shot. Shout out to Bruce Pearl, 6th in Temple, 131st in defense. Just trying to entertain people.
It's a fun trial. Come on, Lee.
There is another team to watch out for.
Okay. Go ahead, Joey. The
ratings reveal some sitting at number 42. They're going to need to do work down the stretch, specifically starting Saturday, or actually starting Wednesday and not losing in-state. But Rocky Top still has a shot.
Still has a shot, hosting Vanderbilt and then at South Carolina. They
need to win the South Carolina game, but if they do, mm-hmm. watch out. All of a sudden they're sitting at 17-12, wins over South Carolina and Kentucky. And you know, remember, wins over like UNC Wilmington and some other ones out of conference that are okay. Watch out. Tennessee's the one.
Can you say the same thing for Vanderbilt then?
I don't want to go there with Vanderbilt.
Maybe
next week. They go 2-0 this week. We'll talk Vanderbilt next week, Lee. I just can't.
Toby and I have got opposite ends of the battle for the Volunteer State.
Let's talk about a couple of
– You've just made Vanderbilt his team, though. We're going to be hearing about them.
Tennessee beat Georgia Tech, Zach. You need to be on the Tennessee Vanderbilt.
Anybody can beat Kansas, but if you beat Georgia Tech
– Matt, I thought Matt already gave Vandy the kiss of death earlier this year.
Yeah, Matt, real quick in the American, not much of news out of the conference this week. SMU picked up a nice road win in Houston, but we're just looking at a two-bid league here, correct?
Yes, barring any kind of craziness in Hartford there, it's two bids.
Right, and
how about UConn?
I'm not going to let you discuss it.
It's about what SMU did on Saturday. Like, I actually am big on SMU this year.
Okay.
They faced some, but Saturday was old school SMU. They didn't overcome adversity. They got basically down 20 at home to Tulane, which I didn't even think was possible. And then Tulane's women almost beat UConn. Maybe Tulane basketball has suddenly switched bodies with somebody else. Or I don't know, but I think SMU and Cincy are probably it. Houston,
It's not there. I mean, let's see what they do this week. If they beat UConn and win at Memphis this week, we can talk to them next week.
We're just happy to be here, Chad. UConn.
Kelvin Sampson to NC State. Let that sink in.
Stalika, over in the A-10, another conference with not much of note happening. VCU picked up a nice road win at Richmond. Rhode Island pretty much killed themselves by losing at home to Fordham. But is this also just a two-bid league and that's it?
Dayton was also playing with fire against St. Bonaventure. They managed to get down 15 points in the first half before being able to come back and actually win by a comfortable margin. I mean, they've got to look out for Davidson because that's one of those alligator holes that the puppet likes to talk about. Who knows how Jack Gibbs will be able to do against the Flyers, but I think we're all just counting down to when VCU and Dayton have their second matchup in Dayton.
Tytel, would you agree with him? Is that all it comes down to? Is we'll see how this plays out, but it's a two-bid league?
I think it's almost a slam dunk that the two-bid league. I will be getting on the subway to go watch Dayton when they come to play GW on March 4th. So see him in person and give you the true scouting report, but I agree with what Stalika said, two bids.
Okay.
Dad, I'm done with Rhode Island as a state, as an
it doesn't exist anymore.
How many years?
Connecticut and Massachusetts, okay?
How many years do we need to do this? Rhode Island, I want to like you. And then you do things like lose to Fordham. And
Providence, it can still make it. Providence can.
Yeah, no, I actually think, it would be really like nobody listens because it's like listening to two ants argue, but the amount of joy from the Providence fan base if the end result of this year is they get in and Rhode Island misses out, the way things look in November, it will be really – we'll have to remind them to just pipe down because nobody cares, which we do annually, but it will be entertaining to watch. Also, just real quick, St. Bonaventure, if in terms of an A-10 sleeper in the A-10 tournament, St. Bonaventure would be my team.
All right. David, West Coast Conference.
Yeah.
This is it for the West Coast Conference for the regular season this week. Their conference tournament starts next week. The Zags, their final test of the season coming up Saturday, hosting BYU. Any chance that they don't blow them out in that game?
Zero.
Okay.
I suppose they could oversleep.
I suppose they oversleep. St. Mary's, actually, though, did kind of impress me this week. Not only going to BYU and winning, but kind of winning impressively.
Yeah, St. Mary's is good. It's just that Gonzaga is amazingly good.
Sleeky, you have an answer to the question on the screen for us?
I'm just pointing out the question. I don't have an answer for it.
The answer is, what don't they have?
Okay. Yeah. One last team I do want to quickly discuss. I'll actually pull up the Missouri Valley Conference standings here. Wichita State just cracked the top 25.
What kind of a question is that?
Wichita State just cracked the top 25 today. 15-1 in conference, tied with Illinois State, 25-4 overall. This is also the balance of their regular season schedule up here. Titel, do you think now that they're a top 25 team, Wichita State is a lock for the tournament?
Absolutely not. They're looking very good. And when your non-conference losses are Louisville, who's looking like a top two seed, Michigan State, who's fading, and Oklahoma State, who everybody loves apparently, you have a great season ahead of you. Losing at Illinois State this year is nothing to lose sleep over. They should finish off with wins home to Evansville and at Missouri State. If they can take care of business in the conference tourney and end up like 29-4, that's a lock, but we're not there quite yet.
Okay.
See, I'm hot takey. I think if they lose out, they're wearing white. Like, they're good. They're really good. And what I also think is we each need to chip in $5 here.
What have you been drinking?
We each take a team three or below, because if we know one thing about Arch Madness, there's no way we're getting Wichita State, Illinois State. That would be too simple and make too much sense. And it comes down to which of these garbage teams underneath somehow weasel their way into a final.
I agree with you, Lee. I think we're going to see one of these teams weasel their way into the final, but I think we're going to see Wichita or Illinois win it. Illinois State win it, though.
We're going to see Northern Iowa in the final, and we're going
to
see.
No, I mean, if Loyola gets to the final and people are trying to make a case, no.
Well,
no.
All I got to say is John Rothstein doesn't think it's an upset to lose to Indiana State when you're Butler.
I keep forgetting that.
What year is this? Is it 1979?
I was trying to think of crazy things John Rothstein had said this year, and I couldn't remember that one.
I thought Lee was going to say 1985 as it relates to Loyola and their Sweet 16 run that year. Highest ever for an NCC team.
That's a very good point. Is the Loyola team that's struggling right now? Lost 5 of 6, but you know, they'll win 3 in St. Louis somehow.
We're really getting off topic here if we're talking Loyola Chicago basketball. So let me turn to you for some final thoughts. And Matt, let me start with you. Any other thoughts about what we've seen this past week and what we've got coming up ahead of us?
I'm going to say, I think the whole thing looks cut and dry. We were pretty much in agreement on Thursday, but somehow, someway, I still think there's going to be some craziness in championship week, and at least a couple of these teams either sneak in the field or make a strong case for discussion. Say someone like a Middle Tennessee is going to lose in the conference tournament and get into the at-large pool.
All right, Stalika.
I think it bears repeating going back to Mark Gottfried. I mean, it's pretty early to announce he's going to be dismissed, but I suppose in his defense, I mean, who's going to want to take that NC State job knowing that if you underperform that you could be canned midseason, because that's something that usually should be saved for, let's say, shenanigans like you would see at Rutgers or who knows where else.
Okay. And Joby, your thoughts?
Well, it's been well documented that you really don't see many teams below 500 in their conferences making tournaments. It's the worst case that we constantly point to is Florida State with Bobby Sura going 6-10 in a very loaded ACC. this year the ACC and other conferences like the Big 12 and maybe even the Big East could have a plethora of losing teams. I mean, coming into the field, and that is an indication of 68 teams versus 64, but it is also an indication that the bubble is just really unusually weak for the mid-majors. You don't have mid-majors popping up. And, yeah, even if there's wackiness in championship week and Middle can get a bid, or Wichita State can get a bid, or Dayton both losing or something like that, you're still only talking about three bids. Usually there's like five or six like that. So I think we're going to see a record number of losing conference record teams in it, the ACC and Big 12 with the Big East also supplying those teams.
And I think, Joby, just to follow up on that, we may start hearing these calls, and actually I heard Joe Lunardi mention it today, for should we require everybody to be at least 500 in their conference to make the field. I don't agree with that because I think that you can be 8-10 and be a lot – in conference be a lot better than a, you know – second or third place team in Conference USA, but
well, let's be careful about that because we're not taking into account chaos that's going to happen in some of the smaller conferences.
Right. Well,
I appreciate his sentiment, but I disagree because if you put together a bracket with the rules now and a bracket where everyone has to finish 500, like, I mean, look, I'm a UConn fan, but like, I mean, come on, like, it's just not as good of a bracket is the problem.
Well, and one last comment on that. Is the teams you put in, everybody thinks that it'll be UNC Wilmington if they lose or Middle. Those aren't the teams that will get in. It's going to be teams from the SEC that aren't that great. It's going to be Utah. I mean, it's going to be teams like that who happen to sneak by with winning records in a major conference, in a less good major conference than the ACC, Big East, and Big 12.
Yeah, exactly. Or you'll put a team like a Rhode Island back up in there, or you'll put a team like a
LaSalle,
or a Boise State.
It won't be UConn, but they'll find maybe they find a third American team because the conference is actually having a good year in terms of the metrics compared to the
Memphis.
Last year. I'm not in favor of it. I'm not in favor of it. I'm just saying, God, Memphis. Oh, God.
Let me turn to you for any final thoughts.
So one of the reasons John Calipari can always get great recruits to come in from high school senior to college freshman is because the class right before them is heading to the NBA. That's why you can get amazing bigs like Bam Adebayo, Karl Anthony Towns, et cetera, et cetera. One thing we haven't seen during the Calipari era in college is to see what would happen if all these guys stayed together and played on the same team. But thanks to the NBA, we're finally going to get to see Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins on the same court at the same time. Granted, it did not work for my Phoenix Suns in the backcourt with Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker as they are last in the Western Conference. But I am super stoked to see a Kentucky team, albeit in the NBA, playing together with guys staying for more than 1 year, although DeMarcus might leave, we'll see.
And on the other side of that trade, shout out to the Sacramento Kings for assembling a team to try and go after Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference. There you go.
David, your thoughts.
a lot to get to. Again, under the radar, we'll talk more about some of those mid-major teams. I just real quick before I get to my final thought, I would like to see UNC Wilmington, Texas Arlington, Middle Tennessee, considering how weak of the bubble is, at least considered, because I think while they might not have much on the surface of as far as top 100 wins, they've won a lot of road games, and they've beaten a lot of teams that have won a lot of home games on the road. And sometimes I think those can be harder to win than beating a top 50 team that's only won one or two games on the road, like Michigan and TCU. But speaking of, we had some – I need some help with some of the details, but Daniel Webster College – where are they located?
They are a Division III school in New Hampshire. They were playing
game
of the season against Southern Vermont. So that New Hampshire-Vermont rivalry that we love for our team of the people.
Yes. And I think with about 14 and a half minutes to go in the second half in what was to be the last game for Daniel Webster College of the season, and on top of that, not just the last game of the season, but the last game of the program's history, because the school is closing at the end of this academic year. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Gets into a brawl that stops the game. They have to forfeit the game. Now, that's pretty outrageous. Getting into a brawl, having a game forfeited, in your last game of the season when your college is closing. Well, two of their players got arrested for assault, and they pretty much deserved it. If you saw the video, if you haven't, Google it. And because it was seemingly unprovoked, and it was the sixth game they've had to forfeit this season.
That's the best part of it.
Now, there are some – like, there are a few signs here that things may not be going well. They got into a fight. They had to forfeit the game. Two of their players got arrested. It was their sixth forfeiture. It was their last game of the season. Their college is closing. Things aren't going well.
Well, we also had another piece of breaking news, David. Apparently, they've also been banned by the NCAA for next season now.
Yes, yes. NCAA banned for next season.
Now, you know what? You just don't understand, though. I've been to Nashua. You don't know what it's like, man. It's hard scrabble streets that get you angry every single day at the world. And don't believe me. Believe one of their sons, Nashua native Mike Lupica, has got that anger every single day of his life. It is a hard life in Nashua. I understand. Shout out to Daniel Webster. Can't take that kind of crap when the Manchesters of the world try and keep you down. Australia wants to come up with this shit.
I'll tell you what. I guess on that note, I think we got to call it a night here. Again, on behalf
Nashua, stand up.
On behalf of Legio Vecchio, shouting out down there, John Titel, Matt Sikowski, Jim Fortson, David Griggs, and John Sleeker to my sides. I'm
three 1-point losses and 1 2-point loss. Nebraska should be 15-10, 9-5 in the conference.
He's been muted. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Have a great night. We'll talk to you again real soon.